Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Gnar Trees podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book, Is a River Alive? By Robert MacFarlane is a work of contemporary nature writing that combines travel reportage, environmental history, cultural anthropology, and ecological philosophy. Its central question is whether rivers should be understood not as inert resources, but as living beings with agency, vulnerability, and rights. MacFarlane approaches this idea through journeys to threatened river systems in Ecuador, India, and Canada, while also returning to a fragile chalk stream near his home in England. The book is not a technical legal treatise or a conventional science book, although it draws on both law and ecology. Its purpose is broader and more imaginative to change the moral and perceptual frame through which readers encounter rivers, by connecting indigenous worldviews, environmental activism, legal personhood campaigns, and close observation of water systems. MacFarlane argues that how societies imagine rivers has direct consequences for how they protect or damage them. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, rivers are presented as living communities rather than passive resources. The book begins from a shift in perception. A river is not merely a channel of water moving through land, but a dynamic community of currents, sediments, plants, animals, microorganisms, weather, human histories, and cultural meanings. MacFarlane uses this idea to challenge the language of resource management, which often treats rivers as units of supply, waste disposal, transport, or energy production. The reasoning is not simply poetic. A river changes, responds, connects habitats, nourishes species, erodes and deposits matter, and participates in cycles that sustain life beyond its banks. To call a river alive is therefore to emphasize relation and process, rather than objecthood. This framing matters because legal and economic systems tend to protect what they can recognize as possessing value. If a river is imagined as property, its degradation can be treated as a cost. If it is understood as a living system, harm to it becomes injury to a shared world. MacFarlane makes the question of aliveness an ethical tool, rather than only a biological classification. Secondly, the Rights of Nature movement gives the book its legal and political framework. A major thread of Is a River Alive? Is the Rights of Nature movement, which seeks to grant ecosystems legal standing or personhood so that they can be defended in courts and policy decisions. MacFarlane treats this movement as a practical challenge to conventional environmental law. Traditional legal systems often protect nature indirectly through human property rights, public health concerns, or regulatory limits on pollution. Rights of nature arguments ask whether rivers, forests, and other ecosystems can be recognized as rights-bearing entities in their own right. The book explores this idea through real campaigns and contested landscapes rather than through abstract theory alone. Its importance lies in the gap between ecological reality and legal categories. Rivers cross borders, carry pollutants from distant sources, and sustain many forms of life, yet law often divides them into parcels, jurisdictions, and permitted uses. By discussing legal personhood for rivers, MacFarlane shows how imagination and institution are linked. A society must first become capable of seeing a river as more than a thing before it can build durable protections around that recognition. Thirdly, the three major journeys show different forms of river harm. MacFarlane organizes much of the book around journeys to river landscapes under pressure in Ecuador, India, and Canada. These locations are not interchangeable examples of environmental damage. Each reveals a different mechanism by which rivers are threatened. In Ecuador, the focus is on cloud forests and mountain streams endangered by mining, where extraction can rupture both ecosystems and the communities that depend on them. In India, wounded creeks, lagoons, and rivers show the cumulative effects of pollution, development, and long-term neglect. In Canada, the wild Nuttay Cow or Magpie River becomes central to debates over damming, energy infrastructure, and river rights. The structure allows MacFarlane to compare forms of harm without reducing them to a single environmental crisis. Mining, pollution, and dams alter rivers in distinct ways by poisoning waters, fragmenting flows, drowning valleys, changing sediment patterns, and disrupting cultural relations. The journeys also reveal that river defense is not only scientific or legal. It is carried by local communities, indigenous leadership, activists, and people whose knowledge comes from sustained attention to place. Fourthly, indigenous knowledge challenges the separation between nature and culture. The book gives significant attention to indigenous perspectives and long-standing cultural understandings in which rivers are treated as beings, ancestors, kin, or sacred presences. MacFarlane does not present these views as decorative folklore. He uses them to challenge a dominant modern division between nature and culture, in which humans stand outside the natural world and evaluate it mainly through utility. In many indigenous legal and spiritual traditions, a river can have responsibilities, relationships, and a form of personhood that does not depend on being human. This matters because the Rights of Nature movement often draws strength from worldviews that were marginalized by colonial law but have retained ecological insight. McFarlane is attentive to the political implications of this point. Recognizing a river as alive is not only a matter of personal wonder, it can also support indigenous sovereignty, local guardianship, and resistance to extractive projects. The book, therefore, asks readers to reconsider whose knowledge counts when environmental decisions are made. Scientific data remains important, but it is shown as incomplete without cultural memory, lived relation, and ethical obligation. Lastly, McFarlane uses lyrical prose to make environmental argument experiential. One of the distinctive features of Is a River Alive? Is its style. McFarlane is known for highly descriptive prose, and here that style becomes part of the argument rather than an ornament added to it. The book asks readers to feel rivers as presences, not only to understand them as systems. Close attention to sound, movement, weather, texture, and danger allows the writing to simulate immersion in river landscapes. This approach can be powerful because environmental harm is often discussed through reports, statistics, and policy language that create distance from what is being lost. McFarlane tries to reduce that distance by making river life sensuously legible. At the same time, the style may not suit readers who want a concise legal analysis or a strictly scientific account. Some may find the language dense or ornate. Yet the method is consistent with the central purpose of the book. If the problem is partly a failure of imagination, then prose that alters perception becomes a serious ecological instrument, not merely literary flourish. In conclusion, Is a River Alive? Is best suited to readers interested in nature writing, environmental ethics, river conservation, indigenous ecological knowledge, and the legal movement to recognize ecosystems as rights-bearing entities. It will also appeal to readers of travel writing who want more than scenery, because McFarlane uses place-based journeys to examine law, politics, culture, and ecological crisis. The practical benefit of the book is not a step-by-step activist manual, but a strengthened framework for thinking about rivers as living systems whose health is inseparable from human futures. Intellectually, it offers a way to connect legal innovation with older forms of ecological relation, showing that environmental protection depends on language, imagination, and institutions as much as on data. Compared with many contemporary conservation books, it stands out for the fusion of literary intensity and political specificity. It is less technical than an environmental law text, more globally reported than a local nature diary, and more philosophically ambitious than a standard climate or biodiversity overview. Its distinctiveness lies in making a legal and ethical question feel immediate what changes when a society stops asking how much a river is worth and starts asking what a river is. Ode, if you would like to support Robert McFarlane, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.